Hello, you're listening to Jeff Grant's Evolving Podcast, a podcast that is dedicated to reading a book today. Hi, how's it going? This is Jeff. This is my podcast. I haven't done any episodes recently. I kind of paused the podcast for a little while because I was working on this other project that took up like 10 months or 11 months. And I was wanting to focus on that, so I kind of stepped back. But I finished that project. The project is this book that just came out. It's called The Leg End. You can buy it on Amazon. I would recommend, okay, if you're looking for it on Amazon and you type in The Leg End, Jeff Grant, it's going to think you spelled legend wrong, so it's going to correct you. So you're going to have to click the like. No, I meant The Leg End, and then it should come up. It's got like a purple and white cover. Yeah, so I'm excited. I thought it'd be fun to do a podcast where I read through some of the book, just to kind of give people a taste of what it is. The story is like it's kind of a modern day story about a family, and the father has an accident at work. He loses his legs. And so the story is about he and his wife and his two kids kind of dealing with that. It's kind of a sad story in a way, but it's, you know, that's what's going on. I don't think I want to say too much more. What I'm going to do is the book is divided into 10 episodes. You could look at it as like a Netflix show with like 10 episodes and each one's like half an hour. So I thought it'd be fun to read through the first episode. So I think it's about 26 or 27 pages in the book. And it might be kind of long. I don't know how long this is going to take. So get comfortable. This is the story. This is how it goes. This is called The Leg End. Episode 1, The Last Day. Chapter 1. Nina couldn't draw, but she tried. Mickey Mouse. He was supposed to just be a bunch of circles, right? He looked really stupid, but the further she got, the more she kind of liked it. Stupid is cool. Professor Espino was lecturing about the difference between Spanish from Spain and Mexico. Nina was barely paying attention, so all she heard was, Usted, 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 usted. She had 3 years worth of C's in high school Spanish under her belt, so she already knew this stuff. This was her first semester at Tarrant County College, Northeast Campus, and so far college hadn't been as exciting as promised. Living at home with her jerk dad probably didn't help. If you're going to live under this roof, you will go to college. She didn't fight it though, and enrolled a week before the fall semester began. He was paying for it anyway. Everyone said college was what you were supposed to do, and she hadn't thought through why that was yet. Something about jobs or whatever. A few of her friends got to go away to school. They had parents who had gone too, but her dad had never finished TCC, even back when it was called TCJC. They took away the junior to seem more prestigious, Nina overheard a nerd say one time. What an old loser. Her and her dad didn't have the best relationship, obviously. Psst. Nina felt a tap on her shoulder, and her sort of friend Dave handed her a piece of folded paper. She opened it up and read his note. Wanna do drugs? She held back a laugh. Now this was the kind of cliche college trouble she'd been wanting to get into. She turned to look at him, not sure how serious he was. It wasn't even lunchtime yet. He leaned towards her and whispered intelligently, I got some fun drugs. My parents are gone. She thought about it. She'd had a druggy phase her junior year of high school, which had mostly been weed and alcohol. She didn't know what he meant by fun drugs. Weed and alcohol had been pretty fun. Her dad had gotten pretty pissed back then, though, and she didn't know if she wanted to deal with all that drama again. But if he never found out... Today? She asked. Professor Espino was busy up front talking to some teacher's pet kids. Dave shrugged. Yeah, after class. Thinking about it a little more might have been wise, but Nina wasn't wise, and she thought thinking was dumb. Okay. Dave wasn't kidding. He did have fun drugs. The house was dark, because 19-year-olds don't usually remember to turn all the lights on, especially when they're high or low or whatever these two were. She smoked a joint and drank a little vodka. Then Dave reached in his jeans and pulled out a bag of white powder. Snorting cool. Huh? I forgot to get needles. Takes too long anyway. He dumped some cocaine on a Where's Waldo book and did the sniffing thing she'd seen in movies but hadn't gotten around to yet in real life. She laughed. Wow, I'm really living my life today. As she watched him do another line, she imagined a camera zooming in real fast and she thought it'd be fun to pretend like she was a hip character in a drug movie. Damn, that's good. Wait, I want to do the thing with the dollar. You have a dollar? Dave was confused. She didn't have a dollar, so she'd need to use her MacGyver brain. You care if I use a page from the Waldo book? Dave didn't care about pretty much anything at the moment.
Yeah.
She turned to a page and ripped out a bit that didn't have any Waldos on it that she could see and rolled it up. Okay, I'm doing it. Dave cheered as she leaned in and snorted a little powder.
Whew! I said God da-
Her blaspheme was cut short when she banged her head into Dave's.
Oh, sorry, man.
He just laughed. Then she laughed. Then he laughed again. Good times.
Oh, shit!
She stood up.
What happened? Dave mumbled.
She pointed at a clock on the wall for 8 full seconds.
Is that the right time?
I think.
I gotta get home.
Huh? She forgot to say goodbye to Dave, who wouldn't have noticed anyway. She ran into the bathroom and washed a little coke off her nose. Don't want to look suspicious. She bobbled out the front door and ran like a rag doll to her white Camry. Her dad was going to be home for his lunch break at 12:30, and it was a few minutes after noon. And if she wasn't home when he got back, he would ask where she'd been. And she wasn't good at lying without thinking about it a little. And she didn't have time for that, so she needed to hurry. After driving a few miles, she rubbed her eyes and saw a line of traffic ahead.
I ain't got time for that crap.
She cut into a neighborhood she sometimes cut through when it was too busy on the main streets. Her house was in the next neighborhood over. Driving fast always made Nina feel cool. She thought other drivers were stupid and that she was maybe a genius on the road, which gave her the right to speed. Maybe it was dangerous for other people, but she was special and she knew how to turn and dodge and slow down quick and with her above average response time. She could burn rubber safely. Cops understand this stuff. Nina had heard driving under the influence of drugs was dangerous, but she thought that was just a bunch of corporate Trump BS stuff. She was doing just fine, thank you very much. She turned a corner at about 50 miles per hour, which would have been unwise if she wasn't so gifted behind the wheel. She flew by a sign saying a blind kid lived in the neighborhood, but she didn't see him, so it was no biggie. She had a bit of a straightaway, so she sped up, just like in Mario Kart. Then she saw an Amazon truck pulled to one side of the street, which reminded her that she needed to order some binder dividers for a school thing. The truck was flying towards her, which to her just didn't seem safe.
Get out of my way, Amazon truck!
Honk. Chapter 2. John Albright had a long list of stops and a truck full of packages and boxes. It was 10 a.m. and he had been at it since 5:30. When he got to the hub before the sun came up, he was given a list with 271 deliveries for the day. He'd already knocked out 140, so he was ahead of schedule for his 10-hour shift. It was his 8th year delivering for Amazon, though through a partner company, not directly for the behemoth. Before that, he'd been a mailman for the USPS for 9 years. He enjoyed the fast pace and getting to see different sides of town every day, though at this point, he felt like he knew every inch of the greater North Fort Worth area. Most of his days were spent winding through suburb after suburb. They felt infinite around here, like you could just keep going all the way to Dallas, through them if you wanted. It was a consumer-driven society with customers checking out in their virtual carts at all hours of the day and night, so he was always busy, especially during the holidays, which were starting soon. He checked the map on his work phone and came to a stop for the next delivery at a two-story house in a moderately upscale neighborhood. He hurried to the back of the van and grabbed one of the bigger boxes. It was a bit of a wrestling match getting it out the side door. He thought about using a dolly, which was recommended, but it was just light enough to carry. Besides, it would eat up another 20 seconds to get the dolly from the back, and he could be back in his driver's seat and onto the next delivery in that amount of time. For a 42-year-old, he was in good shape from doing this fast-paced physical job 4 to 5 days a week. Sometimes he picked up a fifth for the extra money, or just because staying at home was boring. Apparently, delivery drivers walked around 10 miles per shift, though of course it was broken up over many sidewalks and driveways. He got the big box to the porch quickly, took a picture, and rung the doorbell before turning back towards the truck.
Thank you, sir.
He looked back to see a woman who looked about 75 waving at him from the front door. He waved back politely.
No problem, ma'am. How long do you think it'll take to put together?
I'm sorry? He asked, checking the time on his work phone.
The shelf.
Oh, I don't know, ma'am. I just deliver the packages. There's probably some information on the page where you ordered it. She laughed to herself.
Why didn't I think about that?
That makes sense.
Would you like a bottled water, sir?
Oh, I'm good. I've got a big Ozarka in the van. Thanks, though. It was best to keep peppy in these situations. Usually the customer could pick up that you were in a hurry.
They really work you kids to the bone, don't they?
She asked, shaking her head disappointingly. John shrugged. You have a nice day, ma'am. He jogged back to the van, hoping she didn't say anything else. He felt rude, but he was on the clock and the train was on the tracks and the show had to go on, etc. 45 minutes later, he was parked in front of a QT listening to Nirvana on an oldies station. He got a 30-minute break every 5 hours to catch his breath and shovel something into his mouth. He was a fast eater, so he'd already finished the pizza he'd just bought inside. He listened to Kurt Cobain sing about an albino and then his libido, a word John had learned from this exact song a long time ago. Memories. Just then the song paused and his stereo rung. Libby flashed on the digital display. He tapped a button to answer.
Hey baby, how's your day going?
Just heading to a store. He could hear her driving. Gonna be there most of the afternoon, I think. Where are you?
At QT and Keller.
Oh, you're not too far from me. Got a lot of packages today?
About average.
Think you'll be off in time for dinner? She asked.
Oh yeah.
Any ideas where you want to go? He thought about it.
I don't know, maybe Nukes or Mexican. That always sounds good.
Either of those are fine with me. We'll see what the kids are in the mood for. Did they get off to school all right?
Well, what?
Alden had to drag Chris out of bed. Jeez, that kid. She stays up too late on her tablet. We should probably take it away from her at a certain time. She has zero self-discipline.
Yeah, you're right. We should discuss that.
You know she'll hate us if we take it.
Well, we're her parents. She doesn't have to like us.
Yeah. All right, well, let's aim for 6 for dinner.
Sounds good.
Hope your day goes well, babe.
You too. Love you.
Love you too.
Chapter 3.
Libby hung up as she pulled her Miata into a strip mall parking lot and looked up at the sign for her destination, The Fungin, a comic book / nerd shop. There was a bird's nest in the O of the sign. She sighed to herself, checked her makeup in the mirror, and got out of the car. Her low pumps clomped on the concrete as she approached the door. She wondered if she'd dressed too formally for the environment, but she wanted to present a professional face for the client. She stuffed her clipboard under her armpit As she opened the door, which she noted could use some Windex, a toy dragon roared at her as she entered and set off its motion sensor. A skeletal man behind the counter sat up from a bench when he saw her, straightening his drooping glasses. "Hello, are you Miss Albright?" She set her things on the counter and extended a hand. "Yes, and you're Greg?" "Correct. Thanks for coming in." She looked around the store. There were about 10 aisles filled with game books and dice and action figures Libby didn't recognize. The shelves were in dire need of organizing. "Pardon the mess. It's been busy lately, and I'm short-staffed at the moment." "I understand." She scanned the rest of the store like a robot looking for errors. The back wall was covered with comic books facing forward, many falling to the floor. A few feet from there was a row of about 5 big white folding tables. She pointed at them. "What are those for?" "We have gaming events throughout the week. Tonight we have a D&D group. Dungeons and Dragons." "I've heard of it," she was thinking. "Is that every night?" "Not every night, no, but most nights. Different games, though. We have several regulars. It's a nice community, mostly teenagers. Well, pre-teenagers." "And do they buy anything?"
Not exactly. Sometimes their parents give them money. So they just hang out? Pretty much. Sometimes I'll order a pizza. They like to bring snacks and soda."
"Okay. Is that a bad thing?"
"Well, not if you're running a youth community center."
"What do you mean?"
"Look, it's good you're creating a safe space for these kids, but you're running a business, right?" He looked down.
"Yeah."
"From what you said in your email, business hasn't been great." She looked around. "The store, frankly, looks like a disaster."
"You're right. It's just hard to find time to straighten things. I really need some help."
"Well, you call the right person. Let me make some notes and I'll let you know what I'm thinking."
"Thank you."
"Of course. We'll get this figured out, Mr. Roberts." She pulled a small legal pad out of her purse and started scribbling down notes and ideas Mr. Roberts could implement to get the store back on track financially. Most businesses she consulted with had similar issues they were dealing with, be it not enough quality employees or just losing sight of what they needed to do to compete. She tried not to bring up that her husband worked for Amazon, the Goliath many of the small businesses she consulted with had to deal with. To them, she was the whip-smart woman and business casual who showed up and told them bluntly everything they were doing wrong. She knew a lot of what she told them wasn't easy to hear, but it was her job to cut straight to the truth. It's what they paid her for. Chapter 4. Alden Albright bit into an apple and wondered aloud, "Do people still give apples to teachers? And why is that even a thing?" Nicole smirked. "You should try it, see what happens." He thought about it. Which teacher deserves an apple? Why would you even do that? You already suck up to all your teachers more than anyone else, said his buddy Max.
Hey,
Alden snapped.
Well, you're not wrong.
Emery, their other friend, tapped the lunch table, turning the thought over in her head.
I think apples are just a stand-in. You'd have to think about the teachers individually. Some might prefer grapes or not even fruit, maybe like a coffee mug.
Nicole lifted her phone, having done some Googling, and read what she found.
On the American frontier, families were often responsible for housing and providing for teachers if they wanted their children to attend school. Because apples were an abundant crop, students would bring teachers apples as a form of sustenance and a token of appreciation. From dictionary.com. The other three took that in.
So what would be the modern equivalent of an apple, Alden asked.
A gift card?
I guess that's pretty common. Max grinned.
You should give an apple to Coach Joyce and see what happens. They all laughed. That would be hilarious.
Alden and his three friends, Nicole, Emery, and Max, always sat in the same spot in the cafetorium and enjoyed their nerdy conversations. They were all straight-A students in advanced classes, but Nicole was his main competition in the junior class at East Ordery High School. She was the number one ranked student, and he was number two. Weirdly, they were best friends and would rib each other if they slipped on any quizzes or papers. She never did, which drove him crazy, but it also pushed him.
Thankfully, Emery and Max were ranked 11th and 13th, respectively, so they could just be regular friends without the academic tension. The four of them occupied their own small corner of the student body, not being athletes or drama kids or burnouts or, you know, cool. Other kids thought they could be snobby intellectuals, but they didn't care. After graduation, they'd probably never see any of those regular average people again. Alden had always been smart. Even as a boy, his dad, John, knew he'd eclipse him at some point. Alden loved his dad, but he thought he'd never reached his full potential, having dedicated his life to manual labor jobs like delivering packages. Alden himself would never be satisfied with that. He wanted more. He wanted to be the best, and often he was. He wasn't sure exactly what he wanted to do after college, but the challenge of higher education excited him. Maybe he'd teach. He loved learning and learning how to learn. He was fascinated with how anyone, if they wanted to, could apply themselves to any subject and with enough discipline and commitment could probably find a decent amount of success with it. It was all there for the taking for anyone, and Alden wondered why more people didn't take advantage of the opportunities life offered. He decided years earlier that he wouldn't let laziness and distraction keep him from attaining his goals. He finished his apple and tossed the core into a nearby trash can. Then the bell rung. Chris exited her home economics class and had already forgotten everything Miss Pruitt talked about. As soon as she introduced the day's lesson, homemade hot pockets, Chris put it out of her mind. Why would you need to make your own hot pockets when you can just buy them at the store? You see Finn Wolfhard on Fallon last night? He's so hot, Chris's friend Jeannie said, coming out of nowhere. It was in my suggested videos this morning, but I haven't watched it yet. You should. Why do you like him so much? I mean, I guess he's okay. He's just so mysterious and bony, and he's in a band. Did you know that? Yeah, no duh, everyone knows that, Jeannie. Jeannie was Chris's best friend, though they never hung out outside of school, and pretty much all they did was talk about YouTube videos and whatever pop culture thing was going on. Chris didn't know where she lived or if she had any siblings or how wealthy or poor her family was, mostly just that she wanted to marry Finn Wolfhard someday. Jeannie disappeared just as quickly as she showed up, and Chris got to her locker and felt that familiar pang. What's my combination again? She knew the first two numbers, 21 and 15, and the third was 4 or 6. She tried both and neither worked. Wait, which way do I turn it each time? She took a full minute and three attempts to finally get it open. If she had any shame, she would have been embarrassed at how filthy the inside of her locker was, but it wasn't a thing she ever considered. Who cared if she had a bag of cheese balls from the first day of school still sitting in there? And what was the point of picking up all the wads of trash? Some of those were quizzes she'd barely passed, and she might need to look at them again someday. She grabbed a few of the stale cheese balls and ate them as she shut the locker and wiped her fingers on her pants. Chris was 15, but a freshman, because she'd been held back in elementary school. Third grade is no joke. She always felt a little out of touch with her classmates, being older but often not as smart. It was a sensitive topic that made her sad if she thought about it too much. A few minutes later, in English, her teacher, Mr. Schofield, gave a lecture about Lord of the Flies, which Chris was supposed to have read by today. To be fair, she did find an audiobook version on YouTube and listened to about a half an hour of it at double speed before she fell asleep. It was just a bunch of boys on an island, but Mr. Schofield made it sound like it was about so much more. Whatever. Her brother Alden had probably read the book. Maybe she could ask him for a summary. He could probably even have a really smart conversation with Mr. Schofield about it. Chris didn't see what the big deal was with reading. It was so boring. You could watch a movie and hear the same story. Why do you need to go through the same thing slower in a book? The world was full of dummies. YouTube. That's where the juice was. You could find anything you wanted to know on it. Chris was obsessed with YouTube. Maybe someday she could fulfill her lifelong dream of having her own channel about something. Maybe she could talk about her life and give tips to people and have a ring light and give her opinions about movies she liked and shows she binged. She wouldn't even need thousands of subscribers. She'd be fine with just hundreds.
She could pay someone to design a high-resolution logo for her and then sell merch and just print money off her own coolness and personality. She thought about the kids out there all over the world just waiting for her to build her channel, Lord of the Flies. More like Lord of the Eyeballs. Sometimes she stared into space, imagined how many views she'd get someday and all the ad revenue that would come in. She'd fill the pink-lit shelves in her background with so many stuffed animals and toys from cartoons and Netflix shows, her own personal sanctuary to pop culture. Sometimes just thinking about it could send a tear down a pimply cheek. Chapter 5. John parked his blue Explorer next to Libby's Miata at 5:28 and cut the engine. His Amazon shift ended an hour earlier, but he took his time getting home. Normally, it was a 15-minute drive, but he visited a coworker before heading out. They were supposed to leave for dinner at 6, so it wasn't a big deal. John crossed the front yard, heading to the mailbox, crunching fallen leaves as he went. He'd been busy and kept putting off yard work for the last couple of weeks and promised himself he'd get to it the next weekend. For some reason, he was never in the mood to rake after delivering packages for 10 hours. Go figure. It was nice to be home and on his own time clock, finally. He opened the mailbox and pulled everything out, flipping through it to see if there was anything good. Just a couple bills and some junk mail. Typical. They'd lived in their single-story, three-bedroom house ever since Chris was born. It felt small sometimes, but it did the job. Occasionally, he and Libby would entertain the idea of upgrading, but would just decide to stay where they were to save money for the kids' college. They had a couple savings accounts they tried to add to when they could. He figured Alden would more than likely get a few scholarships after he graduated, but Chris was a big question mark. She didn't seem to be in any hurry to grow up. Time would tell, but over the years, he and Libby had chatted about the idea of moving to a nicer place once the kids were gone. As Alden and Chris grew older and more independent, Libby and John felt less necessary and gradually kind of checked out as parents without realizing it. Was that normal? They didn't know. They both looked forward to having more time for each other and getting to travel, just the two of them, in the future. Sure, they tried to go on summer vacations whenever possible, but they always wanted to visit Europe, and that was just way too expensive for four people. "Hey, babe," said John as he opened the creaky side door that led straight into the kitchen. Libby looked up from her laptop at the table. "Hey, sweetie, how was the rest of your day?" "It was good. How was yours?" He leaned in for a quick peck. "It was fine. You see the yard?"
"Yeah."
"We need to rake it this weekend."
"Yeah."
He thought about waking up early on his days off for a second. "Bring me any comic books?" He laughed to himself. "Oh, I forgot. John, you should see that store. I don't know how they make any money. It's just junk everywhere." "I bet. How long do you think you'll be there?"
"Not long.
I mean, I'll let them know my thoughts. But we'll see if they get into any of it. The guy who runs it is pretty overworked."
"I can imagine."
He thought she was doing work on her computer, but when he looked down, he saw she was on Facebook. "Anything happening today?"
"Not really. It's Janet's birthday."
"No kidding. Tell her I said happy birthday. I posted on her wall from all of us."
"Oh, good.
Yeah, you're not going to believe this, but Steve's on his high horse again. I don't know where he finds all his angry memes, but he's on a tear. Guess he's going to save the world with Facebook posts."
"It's a noble pursuit."
"Hey, when were you wanting to leave again?"
6.
"Does that work for you?"
"Might want to remind the kids."
"Good thinking." With that, he headed down the back hallway to where their rooms were. Both doors were closed. He knocked on Alden's first.
"Yellow?"
His son answered from the other side.
"Can I come in?"
"Sure."
He opened the door and saw Alden sitting at his computer.
"What you working on, son?"
"Just a project. We have to build a website. Pretty basic stuff."
"Oh, yeah, definitely." John didn't know anything about computers and didn't want to sound dumb to his smart son. "Doing some coding?"
"A little bit."
"Right on, right on. So did Mom tell you about dinner?"
"Yeah,"
said Alden, looking at the time. 6 o'clock, right?"
"You got it."
"Cool."
Great. So you want me to close the door? Sure. Okay. He did. Sometimes he could catch his son in a talkative mood, but it was rare lately. He pretty much kept to his studies, which was great and all, but John missed the days when he was younger and they'd have more heart-to-hearts. He'd been a sweet and curious kid. I would ask all sorts of questions. Then at a certain point, it was like he realized his dad didn't know the answers anymore, so he quit asking. It made John sad when he thought about it. He knocked on Chris's door a few times but didn't get an answer, which was not abnormal. He covered his eyes and cracked the door. Are you decent? Ah! Chris screamed from the floor and yanked her earbuds out of her ears. Oh, hi, Dad. Sorry, I never know how to come in here. I knocked three times. It's okay. She sat up, pausing the video on the tablet in her hands. Did you have a good day? Yeah. Did you, honey? Yeah. He looked around the room, which was a pigsty. He thought about bringing it up, but he knew it never made any difference. It was like his daughter had zero awareness of filth. Hopefully she'd grow out of it someday, because her room was straight up nasty. You know about dinner, right? Is it ready? No, we're going out to eat. Really? Where? We don't know yet. Probably Mexican. Ooh. You think they'll have chips and salsa? Probably. Most Mexican restaurants do. Really? Yeah, honey, did you not know that? I guess I never thought about it. Well, I'm glad I could educate you. She laughed at her funny dad. We're leaving at 6. Okay. What time is it? 5:45. Wow. Okay. Don't you have a clock? Yeah. Yeah, there's one on my tablet. We should get you one for your wall. Oh, that'd be cool. Well, he said, backing out of the room, make sure you put some pants on, all right? I will. He shut the door and wondered if 15 minutes was long enough for her to put pants and shoes on. Chapter 6. So I drop off the box, right? Everything's kosher, and I'm on my way back to the truck, and suddenly, out of nowhere, this tiny rat dog charges around the corner after me. I mean, at first I laugh, but this thing is rabid. There's foam just, like, dripping out of its mouth. You know, I've crossed into its territory, and it must defend the house by all means necessary. Now, I didn't want to do it, but I grabbed the little guy by the neck, and I just chunked him over the house, like, maybe 50 feet in the air. I am not kidding. I've delivered to this place before lots of inflatable pool stuff, so I'm like 95% sure there's a pool in the back. But, well, I didn't hear a splash, so... And I know what y'all are thinking. No thud or splat either. So I'm hoping there's no camera there, because, I mean, it wouldn't look good, right? And I'm like, I gotta get out of here. So I take a few steps back to the truck, and out of nowhere, Rat Dog comes flying from the sky and lands directly on my face. John knew no one was listening, so he let his story get slightly exaggerated. In reality, the dog had just been behind a window barking at him. Still, it was pretty funny when it happened. None of the rest of the family even looked up from their devices the whole time he was talking. It would have hurt his ego if he'd had higher expectations. As far as they were concerned, he was just driving them to eat. The Albrights tried to go out to eat all together at least once a week. Everyone was on their own schedules, and sometimes it was the only way to check in on each other. And it always started this way, with everyone mentally separated, but John knew once they sat down and started eating, someone would say something, and the others would actually listen, and a real, genuine conversation would happen. Probably. He was at least 75% certain. There was a 15-minute wait at Eduardo's, but they didn't feel like going anywhere else. They'd eaten there maybe 800 times over the years. We should make a rule when we're together like this to not look at our phones. It's so stupid, it just kills family time, said John to his wife, sitting in the waiting area with her. The kids were on another bench staring at their devices. Does it bother you too? Libby rubbed his knee, thinking, of course. I wish it wasn't so difficult to connect. I feel like I haven't talked to Chris in a couple weeks, which is just sad. Why do we let it get like this? I think we're just busy. We don't get a lot of downtime to get a handle, you know? Life is so fast, especially once school starts. It doesn't let up. Yeah, we really need to find time to disconnect, get off the grid or whatever. Maybe we could try it this weekend, Maybe we could make Saturday the no device day of the week. He looked at the kids and their glowing faces. They'd claw our eyes out if we brought that up. She laughed. We'll figure it out. John sighed and watched the hostess walk another family to their table. Then, without thinking, he pulled his own phone out of his pocket and started Googling how to use devices less. They all ordered the same things as usual and dug in as soon as the food came. John shoveled some rice into his mouth and noticed Alden texting with someone on his phone. Son, Alden looked up from his enchiladas. Yeah? Could you not look at your phone while we're eating? It's just Nicole. It's about school, Dad. Son, you can reply, but give me the phone after you do. Seriously? Yeah. John set his fork down. We're trying to enjoy our time together. I am enjoying our time together, Dad. Son, you know what I mean. John reached his hand out so Alden could hand the phone over. This is stupid. Chris was enjoying the show and snickered to herself. Ooh, you're in trouble. John turned to her. You too, smarty. Hand over the tablet. But I wasn't even looking at it, she cried dramatically. Kids, do what your father says, Libby said, nodding supportively at John. Fine, whatever, said John, relinquishing his phone. John looked at Chris. You too, young lady. She huffed. You and Mom have to turn over yours, too. He thought about it for a second. That's a great idea. He handed his phone to his daughter. Then Chris gave him her tablet, and Libby gave the kids her phone, too. They all sat in stubborn silence for a moment. Alden smirked. Are you proud of yourself now? I am. And now that we're all paying attention, I have something to say. They all waited for a snarky dad comment. I love you all very much, and I'm so glad I get to spend this dinner with you. The kids laughed at his utter sincerity, though it was also kind of touching. Love you too, Dad, said Alden, trying to keep a straight face. Why do you hate phones so much, Dad? Do you miss when you didn't have them? Asked Chris. Baby, your mom and I grew up with phones too, only they were attached to a wall. We didn't look at them all day, and they were only for talking. They were just buttons anyway. What did you even do back then? It wasn't that long ago, kid. We're only in our 40s. That is so old. Libby laughed at her daughter. Just you wait. What did you do when you were my age, Mom? Libby grinned. When I was your age. She looked at John. What did we do back then, honey? John looked at her, thinking about the old days. Honestly, when I was 15, I think I just hung out with my friends and played video games. Were you a cool kid, Dad? Asked Chris. Not really. About as cool as you. They all laughed. Alden looked at his mom. Answer the question. What were you doing when you were 15? When I was 15, oh man, 1995? I think I was going out with my first boyfriend. What? John huffed in mock anger. What was his name again? Bill. Bill. I always hated Bill, John said, trying to sound bitter. Chris laughed. How long did you go out with Bill, Mom? Oh, maybe 6 months. We were very serious. I saw Clueless and Billy Madison with him and a Batman movie. We probably just watched movies. It was fun. Alden looked at his dad. What about you? Did you have a girlfriend in high school? Not really. Just crushes, mostly. Chris squinted at him, trying to decide if he was lying or not. John sat back and watched his family chat and laugh. The kids seemed so old and mature now with their own opinions and personalities. They were a joy to talk to. He treasured this time with them, his favorite people, and wished it would last forever. Chapter 7. John stood at the bathroom counter, brushing his teeth and staring at himself in the mirror. He spit and asked, "You think I'm fat, babe?" He turned, modeling his gut. Libby had a leg up, lotioning a foot at the side of their bed, which was just around the corner from where John was in the adjoined master bathroom. Pleasantly plump, right? Pleasantly plump, John mumbled to himself. I am plump. Not sure about the pleasant part. You're pleasant, honey. Usually. He came around the corner, shutting off the bathroom light as he passed. How do you think it'll be after Alden leaves? You think he'll still want to visit Mom and Dad?
Of course he will.
You know, he'll be gone in less than 2 years.
2 years?
He shook his head. I know, it's hard to believe. She watched him go over to the alarm and mess with it. You going in late tomorrow?
I don't have to be there till 6:30.
Hopefully it'll be a light day. We'll see. He pulled back the comforter and climbed into bed. So he'll be gone in 2 years, and then Chris in 4, maybe. What are we going to do then? She finished her feet and set the lotion bottle on the nightstand on her side of the bed.
Well, we've talked about downsizing.
No, we've talked about upsizing. She snickered.
How much space do we need?
Baby, this house is tiny. We could each have our own office, maybe a workout room, and you know I've always wanted a media room. And I've been waiting for the kids to move out to get back into video games, remember?
You do not need a media room.
You'd love it. We could watch Cowboys games, do movie nights. Think of all the rom-coms.
You think I like those way more than I do.
Well, you could do like a Brad Pitt marathon.
You may have a point. But what about traveling? Instead of getting a bigger house, maybe we could see the world. How cool would that be?
Yeah, that'd be nice. Where do you want to go?
She thought about it. I've heard Scotland and Ireland are beautiful. We could go to London for a week or so. You've always wanted to do that.
Yeah, we could hit up some pubs. See that bridge? Buckingham Palace?
She laid down next to him, resting her head on his shoulder.
I bet the river is beautiful at night. We could go see Westminster Abbey.
Ride the tube all over the place.
What if we didn't want to come home? We might hate Fort Worth if we go over there.
I'm willing to risk it, they chuckled.
You think the kids would hate us if we left them here? He asked.
I think they'd be happy for us.
Chris might hate us if we went to California.
True.
Well, maybe before Alden leaves we can do one more big family trip. We'll see where he wants to go.
Probably New York City, said John wistfully before letting out a loud, meaty fart.
Libby sat up. The sweet moment evaporated.
Gross, honey.
Hey, we all ate the same stuff tonight. You're probably holding them in, too.
She shook her head.
Maybe she was, but she wasn't going to bring it up.
You going to bed pretty soon?
Yeah, shortly. He grabbed a World War II book off his nightstand and some reading glasses from the drawer. She watched him as he turned into a cute grandpa before her eyes. Then she sat back on her pillow and grabbed her phone off her own nightstand. They sat in the quiet, winding down from the long day. He made it another 15 minutes before she looked over and saw he'd passed out with the book on his chest. She walked around the bed to set the book back on his nightstand and slide the glasses off his face. She was gentle, as she'd been many nights before, and he didn't notice as he snored away. She turned off his lamp and walked back around the bed and set her own alarm for not long after his. She laid down on her pillow and turned off her lamp too. She was asleep in less than a minute. Chapter 8. John poured himself some coffee in the quiet and dark of the early morning, already in his work shirt. Libby and Alden would be up soon, so he had a bit of time to himself. He sat and sipped and thought through the day in front of him, which would be like so many others. It'd be another long one of driving and driving and dropping off package after package. Some of his coworkers hated it, but he loved the active nature of the job and being on his feet all day, which for him was a plus. Over the years, he'd told people in small talk that it was like he got paid to work out. Not bad. He had an hour before he needed to leave. He tried to keep his morning routine minimal so he could get as much sleep as possible.
Good morning, whispered Libby as she passed and grabbed a mug from the cabinet. How'd you sleep?
Okay. You?
Same.
She poured a cup. You eat yet?
I was about to.
Cereal?
Yeah.
She handed him a box of Raisin Bran, then a half gallon of 2% milk. He poured a bowl as she microwaved some oatmeal for herself as Alden walked in too.
You're up early.
I wanted to look over some school stuff before I left, said her son. You have a test or something? No, just a paper due in English. John listened from the table. So is Chris waking up today? Alden gave him a sarcastic look. No. One of these days I'm just going to leave her here. John shook his head. I'll go talk to her. He scooped the rest of his cereal into his mouth. Good luck. A couple minutes later, John knocked gently on Chris's door. Sweetie, baby, time to get up. He cracked the door to let some of the hallway light in. He could barely see her cover her eyes and turn her face to the other side of the pillow. I know you're awake. He gave her a few seconds to get her bearings before she let out a dramatic, whiny sigh. No, not yet. He turned on her light, which made her squeam, and pulled the covers over her head. Shouldn't you be at work? He held back a chuckle. I'm about to leave. She yawned. Have a good day, Dad. You can turn the light back off as you go. Chrysanthemum, get up. You need to get ready for school. It's not your brother's responsibility to wake you up every morning. Don't call me that. She hated when her parents called her by her full weird name. But he knew it'd get her blood boiling just enough to get her out of bed. You have to go to school. You have to get up. You can't sleep your life away, ma'am. I'm up. God, she said, sitting up. Happy? He walked over and kissed her on top of her head. I'm very happy. I love you. Have a good day, honey. She relented. Love you too, Dad. He walked back to the kitchen, pulled a tumbler out of the cabinet, and dumped the rest of his mug of coffee in it. Gotta get this thing to go. He kissed Libby goodbye and frogged Alden as he passed. See y'all tonight. Love you, honey. Bye, Dad. John knew there'd be traffic. There always was. He left with just enough time to still get to work 20 minutes early. He had the radio on, but wasn't paying close attention. Usually, he'd listen to a podcast, but he couldn't find one fast enough. Oh well. There was something ironic and mildly depressing about having to drive to work so he could drive all day. A few minutes later, he turned into the big Amazon parking lot. It was full, as usual. He hopped out and hurried in through a metal detector and past a security guard and headed down a few halls, then walked straight out another door into the loading area where about 15 delivery trucks were lined up. Morning, John, said his boss, Mr. Stewart, who was 7 years younger than him and dragging a metal shelf on wheels full of bins and boxes. He handed John his work phone. What's the damage? Asked John as he signed into the phone. 251, mostly in Keller. All right. They got to his truck and opened the back door. John had a system for loading everything in. The bins were full of smaller packages and numbered based on the order of when they were supposed to be delivered, all following a computer-designed route to optimize time. Mr. Stewart handed him bins as he walked back and forth in the back of the truck, putting them on shelves along the left side. Then they started filling the floor with all the boxes that were too big for the bins, largest first. After getting everything in and scanning the barcodes on the boxes in each bin of packages, Mr. Stewart wished him well and drugged the empty metal cart away as John hopped in the driver's seat and started the engine. It was a full day. Once he got going, he went into autopilot mode and just drove and drove and walked things to doors. It was weirdly fun once he got into the groove. It felt good to cross things off the list and see the back of the truck get emptier as he went. It was a fairly standard day. Dogs barked at him and the occasional customer waved and smiled as he dropped off their book or whatever the heck they'd ordered. Sometimes he'd play a game in his head and try to guess what was inside the packages, but he knew he was probably 95% wrong. There were just so many items. Maybe he could tell it was a bottle of something, but who knew if it was wine or vinegar or syrup or flavored drinks, whatever. He grabbed a quick lunch at a Subway at 11:30. There was a long line and he had to chomp it down faster than he would have liked. Oh well. It usually took a few stops to get back into his groove after lunch. The house for the fourth delivery was on the left side of the street, so he'd have to pull over on the right to cross it, something he did maybe 45 times a day. He checked his work phone, and it said the delivery was a box. He walked to the back of the truck and found the one with the matching number, which was a huge flat one that was maybe 3 by 4 feet. Good Lord. He opened the side door and drug it awkwardly, wondering what the heck was in the thing. He tried to pick up the box, but it was awkward and a little slippery. Jeez. Finally, he was able to lift it with his arm stretched wide. He hated boxes like this and just wanted to hurry and get it over with. He looked both ways before crossing the street, but just after taking a step, he heard a loud engine and squealing tires. Honk! Alright, that's the end of episode 1. If you want to know what happens after that, you'll have to buy the book, order the book, or maybe I'll give it to you if you're a friend, if you're nice to me. Anyway, yeah, that was fun. I haven't done that before. Feels funny to read it out loud, but it's probably a good way to see if it works. But anyway, thank y'all for listening. Again, if you want to read this book, it's on Amazon. You may have to search for it, type The Leg End and Jeff Grant into it, and then when it thinks you're talking about a legend, correct it to say The Leg End. And it should come up. It's a purple and white book. And thanks for listening. I hope y'all enjoyed this. It was fun. Okay. All right, bye.